I'm Laura Palmer, host of Island Crime. Season 6, Sweethearts, is the story of three teenage girls who were all murdered in Victoria, Canada, within about 12 months.
So she was scared. Something out there scared her.
You've just created the playground where predators can really thrive.
She was a 16-year-old girl. She was a sweetheart.
Listen to Sweethearts at frequencypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get podcasts.
Find your frequency.
Hey, it's Jordan. I'm going to shut up in like 25 seconds, but I wanted to quickly let you know that all week leading up to International Women's Day on Friday, we'll be bringing you stories of amazing women, issues of equality and sexism, and discussions that we really need to be having. Except this week, maybe I'm not the best person to do that. So I'm handing the microphone off to some of the most talented storytellers in this country to have some blunt, honest, and important conversations. So enjoy the work of my amazing colleagues. I'll be back next week and we'll talk then.
There's a scene in the 2004 classic film, Mean Girls, where the popular girls are sitting at their unofficially designated table in the cafeteria. This clique prides itself on, in theory, being the best of friends, but at the same time, excluding all others. To them, that's part of how they get their power. And it's why, if you don't fit their criteria, they literally say,
"You can't sit with us!"
The scene's hilarious, but it gets at a deeper issue that's been bugging me lately. Whether it's Megan versus Kate, Jennifer versus Angelina, or Cardi versus Nikki, women are constantly pitted against each other. But in a time when we're pushing for empowerment for all women, how can we flip that Mean Girls line to send the message to all women that you can sit with us because there's room at the table for everyone? So for International Women's Day, I wanted to know, how can women better help other women? I'm Ashani Nath, senior editor at Flare.com, and I'm here because every day this week, we're celebrating women on The Big Story. To help me answer this question is radio host, freelance writer, and overall badass, Bea Kwame. Bea, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to chat today. It's going to be great.
So we hear a lot about women's empowerment these days. What does that term mean to you?
Women's empowerment, you know, in the most well-meaning take of the phrase, I mean it. I think of it to mean women supporting women, women who have privilege, helping those who have less privilege in certain areas, kind of having this general mandate, I guess, or mission of elevating the status of all women. So whether that is women's empowerment in business, entrepreneurship, corporate life, whether it's just supporting, say, maybe new moms, whether it's supporting women in other intersections, just finding ways to kind of lift as you climb in a way. So I think of it in that way. And I think it's really important.
Yeah, it's just lending a hand.
Exactly. Yeah. If you can, you lend a hand because hopefully somebody had lent a hand to you.
Right.
So it's just kind of continuing that chain and giving back to the next woman and opening doors for her and letting her in the room to start her own experiences too.
Now, when we see women's empowerment events, because obviously we've seen, you know, the rise of a lot of events around this, mm-hmm. especially in the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So can you kind of set the scene for me? What would that type of event look and feel like?
Generally, from most of the events I've attended, it's a very positive vibe. You know, I think there was a point in time where it seemed almost every event I went to, everybody was kind of one-upping the venue, and it was like this really nice hotel, and then an even nicer hotel, and then an even nicer space, and creating kind of this idea of self-care in a place of luxury. So this is a treat for you to be somewhere totally different from your workplace or home with your kids. You are going to come into this beautiful space. There might be like a floral wall or a nice backdrop for like Instagram-worthy pics, lovely snacks, little drinks and things like that, just to kind of set the scene of something really special. And generally, it's a position where you're seeing maybe a keynote or panelists who are women in different phases who are talking about different aspects of their lives and hopefully giving something tangible to the audience. And also networking is a big thing too.
So you wrote about this for Flare.com mm-hmm. recently, but when you went to these events, you also described not only what you were often seeing, but what you weren't seeing. Can you tell me a bit about that?
For sure. So when I started going to kind of women's focused events, women's empowerment events, And even if they're not specifically called women's empowerment events, mm-hmm. that's what a lot of these women's focused events are for. A lot of them are not diverse. That was kind of what I saw over the few years that I had started going to events. And even now, when you see certain events, and we're getting into, you know, Women's History Month and International Women's Day, there's going to be a ton of events. A lot of them, when you see the flyer, you see the ad, you see the Facebook posting, and you see who's going to be speaking or you see who's running the event, a lot of them are very white, mm-hmm. very white. And it's not just, I think that's the most glaring thing as a Black woman, to see that and realize that there's not even that diversity on kind of the optics racially. But once you kind of take a deeper look into things as well, sometimes what I see is we're seeing the same type of woman who is kind of being positioned as the one who's empowered and who we are supposed to aspire to be. You can feel defeated before you even get there. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes I look at these lineups and I think, okay, these amazing CEOs or these amazing entrepreneurs who are making millions of dollars, and these, you know, government officials, and these amazing women who are so far beyond where I'm at. It might be great to sit and hear what they have to say, but sometimes those messages they seem so far away that it's almost like, am I going to leave feeling worse about myself mm-hmm. than I do going in? So I think that what's missing is the diversity, not only on, like, as far as like a racial lens, but diversity of experience, diversity of positioning and where these women are, and diversity in what they're offering. So it's great to have women who have made it and can talk about how they've made it. I want to see more women who are in the journey and who can talk about the pitfalls and the things they're struggling with and what they're looking forward to, and just different types of women. I want to see more LGBTQ women, trans women, to not only be at these events but also be featured and speak about their experiences, women with disabilities. So those are a lot of the things that I tried to highlight and cover in the piece, and just point out to say, obviously for me as a Black woman, the racial aspect is one thing that's very glaring, and it is for a lot of people, but there's a lot more diversity that we can have and inclusion in these spaces for women.
You obviously had some experience, like personal experience with this. You mm-hmm. describe in the piece going to women's events and not seeing yeah. yourself reflected on panels right. or keynote speakers or mm-hmm. even in the topics.
Right.
And so then can you tell me a little bit about what you did and what spaces you tried to create as a result?
Sure. And just to add to that, it wasn't even just, and I should have probably mentioned this before, it wasn't even just the lack of diversity in who's like the speakers, but the lack of diversity in the attendees as well. Mm-hmm. And bringing that up with people, sometimes they'd have an excuse, well, we don't really know where to reach out to different types of women, or these are just kind of our friends, and we're just starting with the circle of people we know. And I get that, but I think there's a lot more work that can be done around that, and that's really not an excuse when even your attendees look very homogenous. So one of the things that I tried to do, and some other women I know kind of in a grassroots level with this, we are not, you know, part of any big organizations or any corporate entities who are putting together women's empowerment events, but we took it on our own. So I started thinking about what type of event would I like to go to? And the first one I thought about was, I would love to hear the perspectives of Black Canadian women in media, because, you know, working in media myself and talking to different people, especially on social media, where kind of that circle is for me, a lot of them are American. Mm-hmm. So it's the U.S. perspective of diversity and race and being a Black woman. And I always felt like in Canada, there are a lot of similarities, but it's very different. And I remember thinking, I'd love to go to an event and just sit there and listen to these women. Somebody said to me, why don't you just make the event then? Mm-hmm. And I was just kind of like, whoa, I didn't say all of that. I just wanted to go. But then it started to nag at me. And I thought, you know what, if I'm interested in hearing this, then I'm sure a lot of other people are interested in hearing this. So I put together like my first solo event called Mirror Images. And that was about 4 years ago. And I had a panel of women who worked in various arms of media. I had Arissa Cox, who is the host of Big Brother Canada. Namagani Kiwanuka, who's like an icon in Canadian media. Anika Elliott, who at the time was working for CP24. I had Tatiana King, who worked in radio. When I put out the ticket sales, I was just like, oh, I don't know who's going to come. I know my friends are going to come, and we'll just kind of see how it goes. But it spread like wildfire, and it like sold out in 2 days. And I spoke to the venue, and he was like, you know what? We can change up the seating. We'll make some space. He's like, this is going to be amazing. And the day of the venue, it's not around anymore. It was the Harlem restaurant that was on Richmond East. It was filled with primarily Black women, young Black women who came with like their phones ready, their notepads to take notes. And it was kind of one of the most beautiful spaces I've ever been in. And even now, I still have people who thank me for that. And just creating that space, there were friendships that were made in that room. There were mentorships that were started in that room. My panelists were amazing, and they were so generous and so giving with their experiences and just so authentic. That really set off for me, you know what, there's a need for this. And this is another big gripe I have with women's empowerment events is that there's often nothing tangible. Mm-hmm. You pay a lot of money for these tickets. You go to these events. You leave maybe with a few, you know, nice quotes from the person you heard. You got a ton of great Instagram pictures. You've probably seen people that you already know and you got to catch up with them. But it's like you leave and then what did that do for you? How did that elevate you? How did that empower you to do anything? Do you have more steps to help you build your business? Or have you connected with somebody who can be a mentor to you? Or, you know, have you found somebody who's going to help watch your kids one night when you want to go to night school or something? I don't know. Like, what do you get from those things? So when I have done my events, whether it's been Mirror Images or another event that I partner with a good friend of mine named Anne Marie, we do one called Curls, Coils, and Cocktails around natural hair for Black women. We always want to do something tangible. So I always think, what is the purpose? It's nice to get a bunch of people together in a nice space and we're all dressed up and yay, women. But I always want people to leave feeling like they gained something.
It sounds like we're kind of tapping into not only how can women help other women, but what help are we actually giving?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yes. We have to be really intentional about what are we offering? What is the help? What is the empowerment? It's very rare that you're going to get empowered just sitting in a lovely room in a nice dress. I think of it like, you know, I'm working with a mentorship program with young Black girls as well. And one of the things that I urge some of the other mentors to keep in mind is our relationship. There's the power dynamic you have to be careful of, but we as the mentors also have to keep our eyes and ears open and learn from our mentees. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's something we also have to think about when we get a bunch of women together. It's easy to look at who's the experts and think, all right, I've got to shut up because I'm not the expert. I've got to hear what they have to say and, you know, take it as gospel truth. We have to allow more room for women in different areas of life to be able to share their experiences because somebody might show up who is not an expert, but they have a perspective that you've never considered before. So I think we need to start having more spaces that are open for women of all walks of life to be able to feel safe and to share what it is that they know of. And that not only helps events to get better when you hear the experience of the women who are coming, but then, like you said, when we think about what are we doing to help women, we think we know what people need. And we're not listening to what people need. So I think that there has to be some of that even before you even start doing an event. Just to think about, you have this, you know, great intention, but you have to make sure it fits the people that you're trying to reach.
You actually had an experience with that, speaking with a trans woman at one of your events, right?
Right. Yes, yes. So I had hosted an event a couple years ago at Women's Health and Women's Hands, a community health center in downtown Toronto, and they work primarily with racialized women. Mm-hmm. So they had put together kind of like an open mic night. It was really cool. So different clients, people who worked there who had different talents came out for the evening and just performed, and I was the MC. And one of the performers was a trans woman. As she went up, she spoke and she kind of did a little intro and just thanked everybody for being so welcoming. She had mentioned that, you know, she was a little hesitant coming to perform, but she knew this would be a safe space. And after I wanted to talk with her because I wanted to know what made it a safe space for her. Mm-hmm. She said, well, for one thing, and I guess the biggest thing for her was she knew people there. She had already built a relationship with people at the center. She knew some of the staff who would be there. She brought some of her own friends, so she felt comfortable with the people she was with as well. And she said, you know, in addition to the fact that she knew that it would be a physically safe space, they were very intentional in the messaging and the promotion that this was going to be very inclusive and women of all walks of life and women from all different backgrounds were going to be there. And it was very explicit that trans women were welcome, mm-hmm. Newcomer women were welcome. And the food they offered, they tried to cater to, you know, everybody just so they could make sure everybody felt like, you know, you're going to feel safe here. But the biggest thing for her was the relationship she had. And it made me think that, again, even in the best of intentions, when people are putting together women's empowerment events and want to reach out to women who are maybe beyond their circle, I think sometimes people think, let me build it and they'll come. Mm-hmm. Create the event and I'll say that I want all kinds of women there and women will just show up. Mm-hmm. But if you haven't engaged communities that are different from your circle, it's hard to put the responsibility on somebody else to take that chance and be like, well, I don't really know this person and I don't really know this space, but hey, I'm a trans woman. I'm going to just show up and hope it's as safe as they say it is. Especially when it comes to marginalized women, you have to start building those relationships and build that trust first.
Speaking about some of those inherent biases or like, say, blind spots, because, you know, mm-hmm. you only know what you know or yeah. what you've been able to learn. So how do we reconcile some of those blind spots or what should we do?
I think the biggest thing that we have to do, and this is work that I've had to do for myself, not just as it relates to, you know, events that I've wanted to put on, but just me wanting to be the type of person that I think I am, the type of person who, you know, fights against oppressions and is an ally to other marginalized folks and who can stand up for herself and who's trying to do work that's going to change things for her own two daughters. I've had to do a lot of research. So if we think about things like accessibility, for example, for me, because I don't really have any physical ailments that, you know, preclude me from being able to walk around or get around where I need to be, accessibility for me sometimes is like, okay, is there parking if I decide to drive? Or am I taking like TTC? Where's the stop? How far am I walking? Mm-hmm. Which is obviously something that has to be considered. But I would never think about, is there a ramp to get in there? Mm-hmm. Or is it just stairs? Or what floor is the event happening on? Is there an elevator there? Is there an elevator and then you've got stairs? So it's like, what's the point of the elevator? Really, it's not helping. But I had to start opening my ears and listening to the experiences of other people. And a big thing has been following different types of women on Twitter specifically, because I find that's the place where people are telling their real authentic stories. They're sharing experiences in real time. Mm-hmm. So I've started following a lot of different women just to see what their daily lives are like and see the things that they're coming up against, see what accessibility issues they're having, see what types of microaggressions women are dealing with that might be different from my own experiences, and keep those things in mind and find ways to kind of mitigate them as I move about my life or as I put on events or as I'm writing about certain things. There's a quote, and I'm going to butcher it because I haven't had it memorized yet, but I know it's from Arundhati Roy, the author. The gist of it is, there are no voiceless people. There are only the purposefully ignored or the purposefully silenced, right? So when we think about biases and things of that nature, and we say we want to be allies, and we say we want to help people, and we want to get past those biases, I think a lot of the times that means, you know, we're speaking up, and we're saying that this is what we want to do, and here's how we're going to create the spaces to make it, you know, more accessible and more welcoming and more safe for everybody. But a lot of the times we're doing that without actually listening. Mm-hmm. We're speaking for people thinking that we need to speak for them because they're voiceless, as opposed to giving them the room and the opportunity to use their own voice and explain what it is that they have to say. So I think with pushing back against biases is obviously that internal work that you have to do and that recognition in yourself of where your biases lie or where just your raw ignorance is, just ignorance because you don't know, right? And it's difficult, especially when you feel you're a progressive person, to realize, oh my God, like, I'm actually not that progressive in this area because I had never had to think about that. So what do? You do the work. You start to find people who are talking about it. You Google, like you search on Twitter, like hashtags and just words and find out who's talking about that stuff, right? And start to listen and start to pay attention to what other people are going through and let that sink into not only how you actively listen to other people's experiences, but then what you do with the privilege you have to create more space.
Yeah, I think sometimes we get so caught up in this idea that it's uncomfortable and you think you're doing well. And if you are told something that maybe you're not doing as well as you thought, then that's a negative reflection on you. But really, it's just a negative like we need to be talking about these things and listening openly.
Exactly.
And giving more women space at the table. And that means equally giving them a chance to speak.
That's it. And giving them a chance to speak in the way that suits them. So an example from when I was writing the piece, I wanted to get the perspectives of, again, keeping in mind the word count, like this could have been like a book, but I wanted to talk to different women who have experiences living with disabilities. I wanted to speak to different trans women. And I spoke to, and I don't know if I'm going to say her last name right, but Biko Buta. She's a trans activist and she was quoted in my piece. I had reached out to another trans woman and she's somebody who I've communicated with before. So this wasn't me just dropping in her inbox like, hey, I want to write about something and I want you as a trans woman to tell me your experience. So I kind of gave her the gist of what I was doing, what I was talking about, and that, you know, I'd love to kind of have her perspective. But she felt that kind of a quick quote or a few sentences here and there was not going to encapsulate her experience sufficiently. So she declined very politely. And I said, oh, well, you know, maybe we can do it this way or that way, just to offer a different way around it based on kind of the feedback I gotten from her at first. And she was still like, you know what, this, I'm excited to read the piece, but I think I will sit this one out. And we've talked since and it's been great. And I'm sure if she had really had any problems with the way I approached her, she would have mentioned it. I feel like we kind of have that openness where she'd be able to do that. But it just made me think that even when I feel, okay, I'm giving you the opportunity to share your piece, that doesn't mean it's still going to fit what somebody thinks is necessary or workable for what they have to say, right? So I think we have to be open to, and it's trial and error, right? You try, you reach out. It doesn't work. You take the lessons. You think about that next time. So now I know, you know what? Maybe there's a different way to go about talking about those specific issues with trans women in a bigger way where there's more light that's shed and we can get a little bit more deeper so she doesn't feel like it's just like a quick snappy sentence here and there and then that wraps up the trans woman's experience. Kim Katrin Milan, who is a good friend of mine and she's an amazing speaker, amazing advocate and activist, especially in the queer community, she has something that she calls the new golden rule. And I love it. And it basically says, don't treat people the way you want to be treated. Treat people the way they want to be treated. So I think we always think about, you know, we will want somebody to be nice to us and we will want somebody to call us in and not call us out and all those different types of things, which is great. But we have to start flipping that lens and realize not everybody is like us. So putting on that filter of treating people the way we want to be treated, that minimizes what their own experience is. So we've got to listen and understand how other people want to be treated, how other people feel safe in spaces, what type of spaces we need to curate and create for other people to feel safe. And even if it's something very different from what we would do for ourselves, we're not putting these events on or writing these things just for people only like us to attend and read. Mm-hmm. So if we really want to do that work and be diligent as far as bringing in and including and welcoming women from different backgrounds, we need to do that in a way that makes sense for them, not just us hand them a cookie and be like, you know, here, we're giving you a spot. So take it or leave it. And if you leave it, then too bad for you. That can't be the way we go about it.
Just finally, you mentioned, obviously, you have two very cute daughters.
Thank you.
So looking towards the future,
yeah,
what do you hope that these events or these spaces look like for them? What do you want to see for the future for them?
Yeah, wow. It's a big one. I think for them, I want to see, obviously, spaces where they feel safe, spaces where they feel heard. I mean, they're both very young right now, so I don't know exactly how their personalities are going to develop or what intersections of life they might also take up as they grow. Right now, I see them as two beautiful, young Black girls, and that alone is going to be enough for them to contend with, I'm sure, in the future. But I want them to definitely feel safe, feel like they have a space to speak up. I want them to, like, I'm trying to raise them to not just be tolerant of other people because I feel tolerant is the bare minimum. I want them to be open and welcoming and, like, enthusiastically welcoming of people who are different from them. So I want to see these spaces start to exemplify that as well. Mm-hmm. Not just tolerance, not just saying we would love to have all women there, because I've been to events where you see women come and maybe they don't have, like, you can tell it's not the best outfit, or another woman is in with a walker, or there's a trans woman there and you see people kind of giving them the side eye. Mm-hmm. You said you were welcoming, but that person does not feel welcome when they're in that space. So I want these spaces to start to be more enthusiastic about inclusion and not just kind of have it as a check mark. And I want them to be tangible. I would be so mad if my, like, daughters grew up and told me, oh, I spent $200 on a ticket and I got, like, a crustless sandwich and, like, a cute picture on whatever Instagram turns out to be later on down the line. I want them to get something out of it. I feel like they are going to continue to need building blocks to achieve whatever it is that they want to achieve in life. And I think as this movement, you know, these various women's movements, as they continue, I can see them only getting stronger, but they need to have that strength be directed in the right way so that it can be long lasting and not just a flash in the pan, right? We've seen too many flash in the pan movements. So we really are on the track right now to push back so that there's no regression. And I just don't want to see them worse off than we are now. And I want to see them be able to take kind of what we have created now and build upon it so that they look back at the events we were doing now and be like, oh, that's like prehistoric. Like, what do you mean you did this and you did that and you didn't do this and you didn't talk about that? So yeah, I think I just want them to feel safe to open their mouth and say what they have to say and know that they are enthusiastically wanted in that space and that they also support women who are not like them to also feel like they are just as welcome in spaces as well, so that we can really start building on all the diverse experiences we have as women.
That sounds like a very good future. I hope so. We get there.
I hope so. I think we will. I'm going to keep hope alive.
B, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
That was B Kwame, radio host and freelance writer, answering how women can better help other women. This was day one of a week-long celebration of women on The Big Story. I'm Ashani Nath. Thanks for listening.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.